Welcome to another episode of Raising Playful Tots. The podcast for moms making the most of playtime. Raising Playful Tots is a weekly internet radio show and podcast where parents can share, learn, and laugh together about natural play ideas to engage their little tots aged between birth and five. So, let's join our host, Melissa Avila, for this week's show.
Welcome to Raising Playful Tots, show number 27. Oh, it's nice to be back. We had a lovely break and family holiday. It was a 19-hour road trip that we all survived. The boys' backpacks were full of books and action figures and sticker books. Now you know that they are my favorite. And colored crayons. We had plenty of stops and a little car sickness. But the only plus about having car sickness when you're on a big road trip like this is that in the back you have everything. Change of clothes, wet wipes, everything to clean yourself up so you can just rock and roll and keep on going. We all survived. I'm certainly not used to going on long car journeys, but we had an audiobook. So we were in good company and we had a pretty good rotation going on with the kids. We had the DVDs that they wanted to see, we had backpacks full of things, and we had our audiobook that we had going on too. Although on the last CD of the audiobook that we're listening to, we're at home. And that's partly because we bargained a lot with the kids to see that we could get our audiobook so that we could hear our audiobook. But they were into their DVDs or, you know, music or something else came up, or we were listening to our iPods. It just got crazy. So here we are at the very last part of a book, the climax, the most exciting part, and we're now home. In a car, we have nothing to do but listen, but at home there's 101 things to do. So we stole a little time this week while we were washing up the dishes to listen to the audiobook because we just had to know what happened at the end. And it was nice to see the kids coming over and like, I recognize this, you were listening to this in the car, and they were recognizing parts of the story too. So that was kind of fun for that they could kind of enjoy that too. And we chose audiobooks for ourselves, but of course we could have had some audiobooks for them as well. You can get audiobooks from your local library. We didn't this time. Things just happened rather fast, and so I went to the bookshop and bought the current ones that we're listening to, but you can get tons of different ones from the library. There's always a really good section there. So let's see if by next week we can get this audiobook finished so that we can find out what happens in the end. And we're going to be that family that sits around the fire in the snow and listens to the story until it's done. That's kind of good. That's not a bad thing, I guess. It's nice, I think, for the kids to see that we're excited about reading, and I don't think that's a bad thing. If you're new to the podcast, welcome. And hi to the regular playmates. Plenty of room at the water table over here. So, what's your week been like for play this week? Did you manage to squeeze in play, or do you really need to add some more? I love hearing what everyone is doing with their tots, so email me at melitza@raisingplayfultots.com, or here's the voicemail number, 214-615-6506 and extension 3998. Okay, this show is packed today, so today I'm excited to share an interview with Josh Golin of the Campaign for a Commercial-Free Childhood. I've mentioned him before on the show about their impromptu move. We're likely to remember them also from the Einstein DVD recall and Money Back around Christmas time 2009. Also, stay tuned after the interview for the weekly find and some savvy summer play activities. I'll be right back after this short break.
Have you ever dreamed of being a karate master? Well, stop dreaming and start chomping with the Karate Glove.
Hi, my name's Molly, inventor of the Karate Glove, and I have just 1.5 words for you. Hi-yah!
The Karate Glove chops through anything. Just put it on and instantly chop through wood. Hi-ya! Concrete. Hi-ya! Brick walls. Hi-ya! Trees. Hi-ya! Small cars. It can even chomp through these 8 guitars. It chomps things.
If I can invent a karate glove, just imagine what you can do. Visit inventnow.org to get started on your invention. Anything's possible. Keep thinking.
Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
It's hi-ya time!
Today I'm talking with Josh Golan, the Associate Director of the Campaign for a Commercial Free Childhood. Campaign for a Commercial Free Childhood is a national coalition of healthcare professionals, educators, advocacy groups, parents, and individuals who care about children. Welcome to Raising Playful Tots.
Thank you for having me.
I received your newsletter for some time now, but many of the listeners will be new to hearing about the CCFC. Can you explain a little bit about who you are and your mission?
Sure. Our mission is to really reclaim childhood from corporate marketers. Advertising is a factor in so many of the key problems facing children today, from childhood obesity to youth violence to irresponsible and precocious sexuality to family stress. And so we really think that the influence that corporate advertisers are having on children is just too much these days and really a negative influence. And so what we try and do is organize parents to speak out against advertisers who are doing inappropriate things to children, and also to advocate for policies that would make it easier for parents to raise children without being undermined by corporate interests.
Well, that's a lot of things to do, but I really enjoy listening to how you managed to do that, and we'll talk about that a little bit more, I think.
Sure.
Can you talk a little bit about the ads? I mean, how many ads do children really see in a year, and has that changed much over time, would you say?
Well, it's difficult to actually track how many ads they see over the course of the year. You know, some estimates are that they see about 2,000 advertising messages a day. Which is just a remarkable number. They see, on average, depending on the age, they see about 30,000 television commercials a year. But what's really changed is that advertising has expanded so much beyond television, and that there's so much more money being spent on advertising to children. So just to take one example, in 1983, you know, which is only 27 years ago, advertisers spent about $100 million a year on advertising directed at children. By 2006, which is the last 2008, which is the last year that we have a number for that, it was $17 billion a year. So over the course of 25 years, from $100 million to $17 billion being spent on advertising to children. So that's just a monumental shift. And when you think about it, you know, in the when I was growing up as a child in the late 70s and the early 80s, you know, television was confined for children, was confined to, you know, some shows on PBS, which were commercial free, and Saturday morning cartoons and a little bit of after school programming. Now we just have several 24-hour networks for children. And as I said, television is just really the tip of the iceberg at this point in how marketers are reaching children.
Yes, you're so right about that. I think that leads us greatly onto pester power. And whenever you are going into shops or even just from the TV, you've got these adverts that are telling the children to ask their parents to do things and to go online themselves. I know that, like you said, when I was going to school and when I was very young, that I had very little influences, I felt. And that marketing has really changed. Can you say a little bit more about why you think that might be?
Yeah, well, first of all, I think it's really important to understand that that's a deliberate strategy by marketers. What's being advertised to kids these days is not just things like toys or movies that are aimed at kids, but it's really products that in the past would have been completely parents' decisions about what to buy. So that's why when you go walk down the cereal aisle, all the cereals are at the, you know, a small child's eye level, and you have every single character that kids just love you know, from Shrek to SpongeBob to Dora the Explorer all over the cereal boxes. It's in order to, you know, get the kid involved in that decision. And in fact, you know, in one of the more notorious market research studies that was done, a company actually did a study to see how they could get kids to nag their parents, how to pester their parents more effectively. So what would they put in the ad that would make, you know, make it clear that the child could be more persuasive in their nagging or pestering? So I think that, you know, that's one of the, you know, it's a deliberate strategy by marketers that's, you know, really one that I just think is completely unethical. I think they're taking advantage of the fact that parents are busier. They're working more hours combined. You know, mom and dad are working a lot more hours than they were. They don't have as much time to think about these issues probably. And, you know, and by that with the fact that the kids are being really pushed to ask for products. You know, one study found that children are asking for things on an average dozens of times until their parents will give in. You know, and when you think about these battles are going on over and over again, it really becomes exhausting to say no over and over again. And it's really, you know, a strategy by the marketers to make it as difficult as possible for kids to, for parents to say no.
You're right. No means no, but you can keep on asking and you might wear me down. How would you encourage parents who want to make a difference in their home but feel judged by the fact that their children like these commercial characters, they want to have their bedrooms devoted to it, or they like all that merchandise, you know, merchandise products? What practical steps can they take?
Well, first of all, I think it starts with limiting screen time. I think that there was a new study that came out, and this was on a little bit older kids, but, you know, children ages 8 to 18 are spending an average of 7.5 hours a day with media. This is a study that just came out a couple months ago. So when you're talking about that quantity of media, it's going to be really hard to fight the battle over characters and merchandise and things like that. So I think it begins with reducing screen time. And probably the most important thing that parents can do in terms of reducing screen time is taking screen media out of children's bedrooms. You know, a remarkably high number of children, 19% of one-year-olds, have a television in their bedrooms these days. So when you know, I think that's the first and most important step that parents can do is take the television, take the computer out of kids' bedrooms. They'll watch less. It'll interfere with sleep less. You'll have a better idea what they're watching, what websites they're going on if it's in a common room as opposed to in a child's bedroom. And if they're watching less, there's going to be less commercial pressure on them. But in terms of, you know, the characters, it's an area where I think it's very hard to teach a young child that, you know, this kind of manipulation is going on and that, you know, really the companies want you to buy this stuff because they want to make money, not because this character loves you. That's a very hard thing to teach a young child. And so I think it's very difficult, but, you know, I think it's something that you have to start setting limits on early and often, because once, I think any parent who knows, buying one SpongeBob product does not cure the itch for SpongeBob products. It makes you want more SpongeBob products or whatever the character is. And so I think setting limits, not, you know, saying, okay, maybe we're going to watch an hour a week of SpongeBob, but you're not going to have the SpongeBob products, because once you buy one, you're going to be buying a lot of them, I think.
Yes. I'm talking with Josh Gowen, the Associate Director of the Campaign for a Commercial-Free Childhood, found at commercialfreechildhood.org. You've had some high-profile campaigns. Can you tell us a bit about the Baby Einstein DVDs from 2009? What happened?
What happened was Baby Einstein and so-called educational DVDs for babies has been one of our big campaigns for a long time. The American Academy of Pediatrics recommends no screen time for kids under the age of two. And there's no evidence that babies learn anything from watching television or DVDs. And yet, you know, companies like Baby Einstein and other companies have marketed these things, these products, as being educational. And in fact, the number one reason that parents give for allowing babies to watch programs like Baby Einstein is because they think it's good for their brain development. So one of the things that we did was we filed a complaint with the Federal Trade Commission a few years ago, actually, for false and deceptive marketing of Baby Einstein products. And the Federal Trade Commission made Baby Einstein make some changes to their marketing. But we didn't feel that that went far enough, and so we shared our information about Baby Einstein and the research that we had, and as well as evidence of Baby Einstein's educational marketing, with some lawyers who threatened a lawsuit against Baby Einstein. And as a result of that threatened lawsuit, Baby Einstein offered refunds to anybody who had purchased a Baby Einstein video in the past 5 years, was able to get their money back. And we were really excited about this, the refunds, not just because we thought it was, you know, parents deserved to get their money back if they had been misled, but because it really is, you know, it's really led to a change in the way that Baby Einstein and these other products are talked about, and a real increased understanding that that babies don't need things like Baby Einstein or Brainy Baby or any of these other videos that are marketed in order to grow optimally. What they need is interaction with parents and loving caregivers.
That's so true. I think sometimes people forget what we used to do. I mean, Baby Einstein and all those type of products are quite new in the scheme of things. And before they were around, we managed to engage and entertain our children quite nicely. So maybe we should go back and talk to some of these other people and what they were doing before.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And we, it's funny, there's a researcher I know who parents say, well, how can I take a shower without putting my kid in front of Baby Einstein? And he says, you know, for thousands of years, you know, parents managed to keep themselves clean without without putting their child in front of a television set. So there must be a way to get it done.
Right. That's a good one. The common cry I also hear with when you take away some of these types of toys that we've been talking about is that the ones that are left behind, you just can't find them in these large big box toy stores. You have to go to the smaller, more select stores, and of course those types of toys are much more expensive. How can you find toys, if you're looking for toys, that appeals to the majority of parents who don't have a huge amount of money to spend, that's not full of the commercial aspects that we've been talking about?
I think that's a great point, and one that doesn't get talked about enough. You know, the overwhelming majority of the toys that are affordable to most parents are the highly commercialized thing, toys. If you're looking, you know, for young children, like I have a 15-month-old, you know, the toys that we think are good for her, you know, the wooden simple things are frankly quite pricey. But I think there's a couple things to consider. One, with younger, you know, with younger, you know, with babies and younger kids, you can make stuff. I mean, simple household items are you know, the greatest toys. You know, you don't need to actually buy things. And then with older children, I think what we want to do is encourage them to do more playing on their own and less with toys. You know, creativity comes not from playing with a toy that's, you know, that is doing the work for the child. Creativity comes from transforming household objects into other things, or making up your own games, getting outside and pretending it's a fantasy world that you're making up. And so I think we want to really get back to, you know, you were mentioning before, some of the things that we used to do, and encouraging play that isn't so dependent on the toys, which unfortunately are so commercialized.
Yeah, and I think also that we have so much access to television and media, like you said, not just with the children. I know you quoted earlier about the children spending a lot of time with media, but so do parents. And we are bombarded with all these messages about educational and doing the best for the children means spending vast sums of money, and that the price of some of those things are getting higher and higher, and everybody feels that they should get each of these toys. Do you think that we buy too many toys for our children now?
Absolutely, absolutely. I think I've seen it with friends' children, and you know, as I said, my daughter's pretty young yet, so we haven't gotten to this stage, and hopefully we won't. But I've seen it with friends' children and relatives, and there's a diminishing return with toys, right? When you get so many, the interest really runs out in a toy much quicker when kids know that they have so many toys. And so I think there's definitely parents feel pressured to buy too much. I think, you know, for a lot of people, the holidays, Christmas, Hanukkah, whatever people celebrate at that time of year has become this huge pressure filled event where they feel they have to just absolutely shower kids with toys. Studies show that more doesn't necessarily mean more happiness, that in fact, you know, the things that kids value are the things that we all value, things like community and family, and relationships, and you know, these kind of binging, these shopping binges that so many of us go on at the holiday time are really, are not helpful to children at all.
No. You've given us a lot of information about trying to get all of us to work towards a commercial-free childhood. Could you give your web address, and is there anything that we can do, anything else that you can teach us?
Well, our web address is commercialfreechildhood.org. I would encourage people to come and look at the website. We have all sorts of fact sheets about advertising to kids, as well as resources. I was just mentioning the holidays. We have a guide for commercial-free holidays, you know, tips from all sorts of experts from around the world about how to decommercialize your holiday celebrations. And also to sign up for our email list so they can get involved in our campaigns and hear more from us because, you know, this is what's really, for us, is really exciting. While the marketing is definitely getting much worse, we are really seeing a growing movement to fight back against this stuff. And so I hope that people who listen to this podcast will get involved in that movement.
Thanks so much. That was Josh Goen. He's an associate director of the Campaign for Commercial Free Childhood. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're listening to Raising Playful Tots. You can find us on the web at www.raisingplayfultots.com.
I really enjoyed that interview. That website again for information, newsletters, and advocacy is commercialfreechildhood.org. And you can also follow them on Twitter at commercialfree. Last time on the show, I talked about how I wanted to interview mums who are making the most of playtime, because this show isn't about perfection in play, but about sharing what works for us as parents and carers who are raising playful tots. We may have all day with our tots, or we may have a few hours. Neither matters. What is fun is talking about what works, getting ideas, and giving it a try. My good friend Jennifer shared with me a fun activity that she's been doing with her daughters, or her daughters have been doing, and she was telling me that they write a recipe for garden salad. Then one of her daughters measures the grass clippings, the weeds, the leaves, the wood chips, the dirt, the flowers, and a little bit of H2O for the vinaigrette. And isn't that great that they just use what they have around them, and they just have this great imagination that goes with it? And she's also telling me that they love to pretend to be garden fairies. That's so cool. I love it when kids can just entertain themselves like that and find ways around of doing things. Time for the weekly find. I spotted in my Twitter stream, and you can find me at Play Activities. The NAEYC tweeted about the Caldecott books of 2010. I hope I'm saying that right. I'll leave a link in the show notes, but they also highlighted four other books that they mentioned in their article, and I liked the look of one called Spoon, and I'll just tell you a little bit about it. A young spoon is jealous of the other utensils in the drawer. All my friends have it so much better than me, he laments. Knife gets to cut and spread, forks gets to dive headfirst into a piece of cake. Everyone thinks chopsticks are really cool. With a light-hearted touch, the book addresses important family, social, and emotional issues such as self-esteem, jealousy, and belonging. Sounds like a good read to me. And something else to leave with you for this week. I'm excited to share that you can read an article that I wrote in the new summer edition of Relax magazine, all about savvy summer play. There are some fun activities, including one with an old shoe. We always have shoes hanging about in our house with all these boys, and they grow so fast that you have worn out shoes that, okay, what are you going to do with them? The little baby shoes you put in a little container and you go, ooh, little baby shoes. But with the older kids, what do you do with them? Well, there's a fab activity that I wrote about that one, so you need to go over there and have a look. Relax magazine is an A4 full-color glossy magazine distributed throughout the UK to middle-class homes with children, from preschool all the way up to teens. It's also circulated in hospitals and education teams and some special selected schools. And you can view it online at www.relax-magazine.com/online. Before I wrap up the show, if you've enjoyed listening to show, please pop over to the blog at www.raisingplayfultots.com and let me know. If you have any play questions that you would like to see answered, send them in and they'll make for future shows. I'll leave all the links in the show notes. You've been listening to Raising Playful Tots, show number 27, for the week of the 30th of May, 2010. Come over and play next week. Until then, find time for some unplugged play. Join with me each week as we share, learn, and laugh together about making the most of early childhood playtime.
Thanks for listening to the Raising Playful Tots podcast. For new show ideas or comments, leave a voicemail at 214-615-6506, extension 3998, or send an email to Melitza@raisingplayfultots.com. You can follow Melitza on Twitter @playactivities, where she tweets about play. Visit the show notes for links to what we have talked about in today's show, or leave a comment at www.raisingplayfultots.com. While you are there, you can sign up for our newsletter so you'll never miss any updates about the show. If you enjoyed today's show, please tell your friends, and please consider writing a review on iTunes to help spread the word.